I am calling Mr. Benjamin Fulford.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benjamin Fulford.
Hi.
Let me start the introduction. Here we go. This is Highway Diary, episode 230. My guest today is Benjamin Fulford. He's the former Asia-Pacific Bureau Chief of Forbes magazine. Now you can find him doing his journalistic due diligence on BenjaminFulford.net. For $11 a month, he'll give you his weekly report. Took a little doing. He is in Tokyo right now. I've always wanted to ask you this, Mr. Fulford. You once said in an interview that the Yakuza is sort of it's part of the Japanese government. Is it managed independently? How does the Japanese government work with the Yakuza mafia?
Okay, the first thing you need to understand that this is not just a Japanese thing, but in Europe and the U.S. as well, as you go up to the top of the power structure, the lines between government, gangsters, intelligence agencies kind of blur, and you end up with a few individuals with great power, many who you've never heard of. And this is the same in Japan. Now, the Yakuza in Japan is also tied to minority peoples, okay? Japan has long had a minority called the Burakumin, who were traditionally, you know, they did stuff that was considered impure by the Buddhists, like dealing with slaughtering animals and leather work and stuff, and they were discriminated against. But they were also traditionally used for, you know, spying and other sort of dirty deeds.
So they're like contracted, like an artist to build a sculpture, like this is a contract, we need you to do this, you know?
Not... They don't have that Western legalistic way of doing things. It's not a written contract. It's sort of a relationship thing. So they're involved in various things, like, you know, the festivals are, and the stalls at the festivals are one type. Then, as I said, the leather workers are another type. And then, for example, in the Edo era, they subcontracted tax collection for the government, you know. So it's a mixed bag. But after World War II, when the Japanese lost, the Japanese sort of, where the Americans subcontracted control of Japan to mostly Korean gangsters, many of whom took on Japanese names, and most post-war Japanese prime ministers are actually ethnically Korean, although most Japanese don't realize this.
They're brought in to do the dirty work. It was famously said that the Pride Fighting Championship, that was a MMA martial arts organization, was run by the Yakuza. Do you know anything about this?
I used to. I sort of forgot. But basically, my view of it is that the Yakuza, I mean, I've known Yakuza who were, their only job was to, they ran a convenience store, you know. A lot of them joined because it's a mutual self-protection society for business, and they don't actually engage in criminal activity. I think the shutting down that Pride thing was, equivalent to shutting down a business in the U.S. because it was run by a Jew. You know, I don't think it was a fair thing they did, all right?
The other thing I want to talk about is you dropped a hint on your last Prepare for Change interview that you receive weekly intelligence briefings from the U.S. military intelligence. Is this a public bulletin? How are you getting access to this?
Oh, this is not public. I mean, I'm involved in a lot of stuff that... I've become a sort of a, because I'm a journalist, right, and I don't have an axe to grind, I become a neutral clearing body for information from various different secret agencies and groups. including Asian secret societies, MI6, KGB, or FSB they're called now, and CIA, Pentagon, Defense Intelligence Agency. I have all sorts of sources of information that I've cultivated over the years.
There's some reports that you've been putting out that are really shocking. And I just am wondering if the U.S. military gives you propaganda or feeds you things that just make them look good. Like, sure, like some of the war types, the general types, probably are fans of Smedley Butler, and they don't want to be hoodwinked into another war. But is it possible that they also just put out a bulletin that makes them look good?
Of course they do. I mean, everyone tries to do that, right? I mean, my job is to try to, you know, filter out what is obviously untrue or propaganda, you know, and sometimes stuff slips through my filters, and when that happens and I become aware of it or readers point out, I do what, you know, other, you know, newspapers do too, and I issue a correction. But, you know, sometimes also in this business, there's a he said, she said aspect to it, right? So, say if I'm writing a story about a divorce and I talk to the woman and I talk to the man and they say contradictory things, what I have to do is put out both contradictory views and let readers decide, you know, which one's speaking the truth. And that happens when you talk to, you know, different agencies with different access to grind. And all you can do in such cases is just put out the various, you know, he said this, she said that. Or you know, the U.S. said this, Iran said that, Israel said the other, you know, and then put it all out there and let people figure out for themselves when it's not clear.
You wrote a September 2nd, 2019, your weekly bulletin said former Japanese Prime Ministers
Junichiro Koizumi and Yasuhiro Nakasone. They were taken in.
Yeah.
I mean, I got several people reporting that, and then they were released a couple days later and appeared in public. So apparently they were read some sort of riot act and threatened, and then they agreed to go along with whatever it was, and they were let go again. And then they both, immediately after being released, issued anti-nuclear energy statements. So that makes it if you look at that, so who benefits from shutting down Japan's nuclear reactors? Well, that's the oil companies. So my best guess, and this is a guess, is that it was a Rockefeller-related oil interest group that, you know, reminded them that they were on a leash, you know. That's my best guess. I don't know.
But it's the U.S. military police that's going and arresting former prime ministers in Japan, which just seems to be that if this is also, you know, made public domain, it's almost an act of war.
So, well, you're pretty naive if you think Japan's an independent country. It's been a U.S. colony since the end of World War II, and you know, what happened was when the Americans, you know, landed in Japan, they called up the former military leaders, like starting with Tojo, and said, you have a choice. You can continue to run the country, but you take orders from us, or you can be executed. And the first bunch of them said, no, I refuse to betray my people, and they were executed as war criminals. And then the current Prime Minister Abe's grandfather, Kishi Nobusuke, said, okay, sure, I'll go along. So ever since then, they have these so-called prime ministers. But basically, I mean, they're given autonomy for stuff that Americans don't care about, like, you know, what to put on yogurt labels and stuff like that. But anything important, they take orders from people like Michael Greenberg of CSIS or there's a few of them, these so-called Japan handlers who actually run the government here.
But you describe a struggle in your post between the politicians that want to send people to war for Iraq and 9/11 and false flag events that they create, and then the military that doesn't want to be hoodwinked anymore. But the Federal Reserve money come through the politicians to the military? So how is this playing out?
Well, the U.S. military managed to get their hands on some dollar printing equipment And they also have good control over a lot of the Middle Eastern oil. So they've kind of been now able to independently finance themselves, which is one reason why they're so openly disobeying the politicians. But yeah, in the old days, that's what it was. And of course, they were also hoodwinked, you know, and they're determined not to have that happen again.
Yeah, like with 9/11 and all. We'll get to some 9/11 news later. You know, with the alleged death of Jeffrey Epstein, it kind of, I started to put together a list of deaths that have been associated with the pedophile scandal. Kate Spade famously was working with the Clinton Foundation. She was found June 5th, 2018, hung by a red scarf. Anthony Bourdain was found hung by a red scarf. His girlfriend at the time made a startling speech to the Cannes Film Festival, and just a week later, Anthony Bourdain was found to hung himself.
I was raped by Harvey Weinstein here at Cannes. I was 21 years old. This festival was his hunting ground. I want to make a prediction. Harvey Weinstein will never be welcomed here ever again. He will live in disgrace, shunned by a film community that once embraced him and covered up for his crimes. And even tonight, sitting among you, there are those who still have to be held accountable for their conduct against women, for behavior that does not belong in this industry, does not belong in any industry or world.
So, and then I'm seeing a parallel. I'm seeing his girlfriend starts putting out stuff that hips him to things in it, you know?
Let me tell you an interesting story that's related to that. In 1992, a Japanese gossip magazine called Friday put out a picture of a geisha by the name of Kohan, who was, and said she was the girlfriend of then Postal Minister Junichiro Koizumi, who later became Prime Minister. And a couple of weeks later, she was found strangled to death with a red scarf. And I talked to the Yakuza, who said that it was, Koizumi strangled her, you know, because she'd gone public about the relationship. And I've talked to her former colleagues and whatever. It's a well-known thing. But yeah, so it seems to be the red scarf, being strangled with a red scarf, is like a secret sign for disobedient woman. And it's good that we're now, you know, catching on to stuff like this. And hopefully we can bring all these criminals to justice one of these days. I wish it would happen sooner. You know, I don't like the fact that Koizumi, who murders women, is out there free still, even though everybody knows he strangles women. That shouldn't be. These people belong in jail, not in, you know, seats of power.
Absolutely. It's like we all know these things. We all know these criminals are out there. There's plenty of evidence, which we'll all also get into other piece of evidence I've collected. But it's sort of maddening that this evidence is out there, you know, like things like architects and engineers for 9/11 truth. And they prove beyond a shadow of a doubt what's going on. Isaac Cappy, May 15, 2019, I told you last time I interviewed you, I met this person, he jumped onto a highway. Someone, Tracy Twineman, was a friend of Isaac Cappy's, and she was hung by a red scarf July 10th of 2019 after she made a video about Isaac Cappy's suicide being near the grounds of an active pedophile procure in Arizona. And then we have Jeffrey Epstein, and your last Prepare for Change, you made a startling statement that he's still alive, and he's just been snuck out of the
jail. Oh, come on. You think the guy, like, he was in this maximum security thing under watch? Do you think that, he was taken out, and he's been singing like a canary, and my sources in the Defense Intelligence Agency said that, you know, he was one of their guys who was providing information on all these elites. So Yeah, that's why he's been given protection, because he's passed on a lot of valuable information. That's what I've heard, yes.
Yeah, I was thinking that he was murdered because as soon as he takes the witness stand and says, oh, this name, okay, there goes the British royal family, okay, this name, okay, there goes the Clintons, okay, this name, okay, there goes that dynasty. I mean, billionaires don't like that, those kinds of odds. They don't want him pointing them out in a public forum.
You know, that certainly avoiding a public trial was clearly what part of the agenda, because, you know, they're trying to sweep this under the carpet. But I suspect that also behind the scenes, it's being used to get these people to go along with, a new script other than the one that they've been following until now. But yeah, I personally would like to see a Nuremberg-type trials for these people, not secret backroom deals, you know?
Yeah, but the court... now, I'm a layman with law. I don't know anything about law. What I've been reading is that the trial could continue as is with all the victims in place, which deserve endless compensation for what has happened to them, if a co-conspirator is named and Ghislaine Maxwell is hiding somewhere, not to be known about, but a guy called Les Wexner, who gave Epstein a $30 million mansion in New York City, people know his address. I mean, nobody's questioning him.
Yeah, and you know what bothers me about the public stuff about Epstein is that you're talking about, you know, let's face it, it's pretty tame stuff, okay? It's basically prostitution, you know, with some underage girls and some, you know, but what we really want to talk about is the torture and murder of prepubescent children and the ritual sacrifice of these children. And they're not, you know, we don't know what was in that underground chamber under their temple. That's the stuff that we really want to find out about. So it's like they're titillating us with this show about, you know, 15-year-old girls having sex with old men and not about the murder and torture of children, which is what we really want, we need to expose. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of evidence for that if you haven't been following this.
Absolutely. And, you know, Jimmy Savile, you know, the day he died, BBC starts doing all these exposés. Oh, he was a pedophile, kind of naming him as a pedophile, and that's the end of the story. And, oh, thank God he's dead. It's just weird. The day he dies, this all comes through the BBC. And they're like, oh, well, open and shut case, he's dead, so it's over. And I just see that happening with this Epstein case, when it's like, there's a lot of co-conspirators. One man can't run this operation.
Sure, but I think the other thing that's going on is that it's one thing. I think, you know, they a lot of people were entrapped, okay? They were tempted into having sex with an underage girl, and then video taped, and then they were blackmailed, right? And sometimes it's better to cut a deal with these people to get evidence about more horrific crimes. You know what I mean? Like I said, that video of Hillary Clinton and Hume Abedin peeling off the girl's face while she's still alive. You know, that sort of thing. We want evidence about that sort of thing. And some of these people who were blackmailed into joining these, you know, eyes wide shut type parties, you know, but we're secretly disgusted, we may have to cut a deal with them to get at the harder core, more, you know, really, really evil people. But again, I want this to be public. We don't want this swept under the carpet. We want Nuremberg-type trials for these people. And that includes Benjamin Netanyahu, who's a mass murderer, I keep reporting. That man does not, he belongs in jail, and he should probably get the death penalty. That's just one I personally have to deal with, because he was involved in Fukushima, and that's, you know, the murder of 20,000 people.
Mm. What's interesting is the British royal family are at the core of Epstein, with Prince Andrew coming to Epstein's Island, and then Jimmy Savile also was a procure for the British royal family, and yet they're not even talked about as...
family has come out, and Prince Andrew has come out and made public statements, unlike a lot of the other people, okay? And he's the younger brother of Prince Charles, all right? So he's not central to that whole family, right? But they're being open about it, at least, you know, compared to the other people whose names were appeared on the list who aren't saying anything at all, you know. So I don't think, I mean, the British royals have certainly some skeletons in their closet, but I wouldn't call them the worst of the worst by any means. I think within that group, they're actually a fairly benevolent faction, you know. Although when you're at that level of power, they do do things that they ordered the death of Princess Diana, is one example. And apparently they have a human sacrifice once a year, or they used to at Balmoral Castle, and some stuff like that. But in the big scheme of things, you know, they were against the plan to murder 90% of humanity, and then they came up with this, supported this carbon tax as a way of saving the environment without killing 90% of humanity. So they fought against the massive genocide and helped, you know, prevent it. So I would say in the balance, you know, they did a lot more good than they did bad, okay?
Yeah, well, we don't have free healthcare in this country, in the United States. It's getting worse and worse. What also drives me crazy is this quick, this was Joe Biden was taking a photograph with Christopher Kuhn, and he couldn't resist himself being attracted to her, the 13-year-old daughter.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, to me, it sounds like he's saying, do you know how horny I am to have a 13-year-old girl standing in front of me?
Yeah, I've heard that one. I mean, what's shocking is that they still have this guy out there as, like, the so-called leading candidate, you know?
I know. That's what it's... I'm, like, I'm living in a bizarro world where I have access to a clip where he says, do you know how horny I am to have a 13-year-old girl standing in front of me? It's pretty clear.
Thank you.
I mean, it's muffled. It's not the perfect audio, but you can hear what he's saying.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that before, you know, and, the system is such that if these people didn't have something you could blackmail them with, they wouldn't get to the top of the power structure. Mm. That's just how it was set up.
In your September 23rd report, you say, from an unknown source this comes... For Hillary to be prosecuted, Hillary Clinton, the whole CIA would have to be dethroned and a whole fake national security system, which was set up to provide cover for crimes used for raising black ops money, covering up covert ops and sanctioned, as well as personal enrichment of top controllers, would have to be declared criminal and thus restricted by about 95%. At the end, it says... Yes, I believe that soon the whole Z-Cabal bunch will be pushed aside by the Chabad using Sanhedrin rabbis, and they will institute Noahide laws.
Well, you know, that, I mean, again, this was sent to me from a military intelligence source, and it's I put it out there. Those are not my words. But if you look at my this week's report, you can see that the Sanhedrin... and the Noahide laws, that's pretty horrific stuff that they're planning. I mean, if you do the details, basically, one of these laws punishes blasphemy or idolatry, right? And for them, that includes Christianity, Hinduism, and Buddhism, and according to those laws, these people don't obey the Jews, they have to be decapitated. I mean, that's pretty... And they came out publicly and had a statement on September 25th, saying this. I mean, they tried to couch it in nice words, but if you do your homework, you find out this is what they say. They say they wanted to abolish the United Nations and replace it with a group of 70 nations who would basically obey the Jews. And that's... Yeah, they came out of the closet, and that's what they proposed. So this is what...
So they said, oh, we'll get rid of the CIA. That's a nasty organization. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to have this Zionist cabal run everything.
So you know, I mean, these guys have an axe to grind, and clearly they see the CIA as a threat, so they want to replace it with a group of rabbis instead, you know, which is, you know... forget it. I mean, you know, I'm none of the above type of guy. You know, I don't. And I actually talked to CIA people of different sorts, and most of them, you know, are not bad people. I mean, they're in a system that where they have to sometimes go along with things that are criminal, and they get killed if they don't. But they think they're, you know, helping, you know, the United States. They don't think that they're, and they're trying to be the good guys. Most of them, I would say.
I guess my, yeah.
Most of them are good guys in a bad system. Some of them are really nasty people who are, you know, psychopaths and should be put away.
I'm just asking, is there a path to getting rid of the evil parts of the CIA and indicting Hillary without putting these rabbis in power?
Well, yeah, that's what we're working on, you know. I think you got to look at the Pentagon and the Asians working together to try to, and now the British Commonwealth, too, you know, to get a more decent, competent and non-corrupt system of governance, you know. I mean, the United States has become a rogue state ruled by messianic psychopaths. I mean, it's a disaster.
Last time we spoke, you said that U.S. elections are chosen in an underground facility in Antarctica run by the Thule Society.
Okay. I've talked to two people who were at this meeting, okay? Now, remember the public news, okay, that you can confirm through, you know, places like AP and stuff, would say that Secretary of State John Kerry was in Antarctica on November 8th, 2016, on the day of the election. Okay,
he was talking to a client scientist, right? Wasn't he talking to client scientist?
Yeah, whatever. I mean, the cover story is whatever it was, but the point is, he was there. And two people I talked to who were at this meeting said that they told Kerry that a decision had been made not to elect Hillary, but to have Trump take power. And Trump originally was being the designated loser. He wasn't supposed to win. And I heard that there was a special forces firefight at the big underground base complex under Denver Airport that took over the election stealing machinery and flipped it in favor of Trump. Mm. And that's why they had this incredible hysteria. So you have, since Trump was put in, you have the corporate media and the, you know, bought and paid for politicians screaming hysterically against Trump, and then the military posing in pictures with them saying, "We back him." So you can see the fault lines in the U.S. political system. I think it's, I think you have, among the gangsters, you have the drug mafia were behind Hillary, and the gambling mafia were behind Trump. And then U.S. military, uniform military was behind Trump, and, you know, a lot of the corporations stuff were behind Hillary, because the Rockefellers control most of the Fortune 500 through foundations, and Hillary is the secret daughter of David Rockefeller. So she's actually Hillary Rockefeller, and Bill Clinton is the son of Winthrop Rockefeller. So we have these, you know, and so this dynasty was put out of power, but they've been fighting tooth and nail ever since to try to reverse this. Mm.
And you said last time that Trump is going to win again for 2020.
I didn't say that.
Oh,
maybe
a source of yours. So I was asking you about Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders. What do you think is going to happen in 2020? And you were saying a source told me that Trump's going to win again.
Well, that's what I was told. I personally would rather that they shut down the entire U.S. government and dissolve the whole thing. And you know, sort of like the fall of the Soviet Union, you know, and I've been pushing to have Canada take over because Canada actually has the, first of all, the median income is way higher than the U.S. That means that the income of which half the people are below and half the people are above, it's just a much better system. So the U.S. military is supported by 70% of the public, and that would stay intact and merge, you know, and absorb the Canadian military. But the Canadians would go and clean up your medical, prison, you know, all that mess you have there, and you know, help you undergo a Chapter 11 restructuring of your economy and your social system. That's what I'm lobbying for. I don't hide that, you know. And then we have the United States of North America. That's what I'm pushing for. So I'm hoping there won't be another election and that Trump will be the last president of the United States. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying I'm lobbying as hard as I can to make it happen. And it'd be a great thing for the American people.
Yeah, well, today is September 30th, which is the deadline. It's the end of the day now of to keep the government open. But I read that Trump immediately signed a stopgap measure funding the United States through November. What is this stopgap measure? What does that mean? If you're bankrupt, what does that mean?
Okay, first of all, by the way, it's October 1st here because I'm in Japan. It's September 30th there.
Yes.
But, you know, what happens is the U.S. has a payments deadline on September 30th, and if they don't make it, then they're given, I think, until October 17th to try to come up with funds, right? And what I think's happened is, you know, I'm hoping, you know, I've been pushing and pushing for this. I've been telling the Chinese from way back, you know, you're paying them money to kill you, right? And cut them off, you know, and I've been telling that to the Japanese. The Japanese tried, then they got hit with Fukushima and they backed off. But you know, bankrupt these bastards, put them out of business, you know, because they're causing problems to the entire planet. It's a rogue state, you know, that's been perpetually at war for you know, reasons that don't benefit the United States or the American people. So hopefully this time it'll actually happen. There'll be a transition to a new system. That's what I was told. My Defense Intelligence Agency sources tell me that a transition to a gold-backed system has begun. We'll see. I'll believe it when I see it, but certainly it's interesting that you have this incredible hysterical media campaign saying, impeach, impeach, for pretty spurious reasons, and then suddenly they shut down for 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah, impeach him, and then the bipartisan, they immediately approve his stopgap measure. So they're like, we're going to impeach you. Oh, you have a stopgap measure to keep our paychecks going? Sure, let's approve that. It seems like theater.
Well, it is. You know, they're not representatives of the American people, unfortunately. The political system is so corrupt, and once you had electronic voting, your democracy had its final death when the Patriot Act was passed, which is identical to the Nazi Constitution. You became a fascist country since that time, and the elections are only a distraction.
On September 23rd, your report, you say, also several Japanese sources tell us multiple threats, earthquakes, nuclear bombs, are being made against Japan in order to force them to fork over more money to the U.S. corporation.
The problem is that you can't wring blood from a stone, you know, and the Japanese are forking over as much as they can already. Mm. But that alone is not enough. And without the Chinese and stuff, it's just not going to be enough. But yeah, there were multiple threats. And to be honest, counter threats are being made too. The reason why no more attacks happened against Japan after Fukushima was, if you remember, if you go back and check the records, you'll see there were like about 800 earthquakes. An earthquake swarm on La Palma Island in the Canarian island chain there in the Atlantic right after Fukushima. La Palma, scientists, there's a huge crack in the middle of the islands, and scientists say that within 1,000 years, that's going to fall into the ocean. And when that happens, a 300 feet tsunami will hit the U.S. East Coast. Okay, and there were 800 earthquakes in La Palma immediately after Fukushima. And this was because the people like Netanyahu were threatening to blow up Mount Fuji. So you do that and we'll do La Palma. And it was a counter threat, and they backed off. Mm. And the same still applies. Another thing people should know is that the so-called Ambassador Stevens, and Peter Hans Kolbenbach, the head of the Jesuits, a whole bunch of other people involved in the Fukushima attack were killed in retaliation.
You've been noting in your report the Trump appointment of Judy Shelton to the Fed Board of Governors, and she's openly stated that a gold-backed currency would be the antidote. My question to you, Mr. Fulford, is if the U.S. is so bankrupt, it owes trillions and trillions to other countries, how would you just write off all that debt and say, oh, sorry, we don't owe you those trillions anymore because we have a new currency? How does the gold-backed currency fix everything?
Well, I mean, what doesn't exist doesn't exist, you know. I mean, I think that the Asians and other creditors would be willing to write off a lot of the U.S. debt if they just stopped all their, you know, warmongering and antisocial behavior. But, you know, when a company goes bankrupt, it gets put under new management. But, you know, the employees don't have their houses seized, you know, and this isn't really the American people. It's the corporate government that's going bankrupt. So it'll be a good thing for the American people. However, you know, they might have to pay a lot more for Chinese trinkets in Walmart. But, you know, that's just a small price to pay for a return to a healthy economy.
So you're saying that the way the debt would be balanced off is it would reposition what's a first world country and what's a third world country?
Well, no, you just can't pay what you don't have. I mean, the United States has unfunded liabilities and debt and stuff, according to the St. Louis Fed. I think it was over $210 trillion. Okay, so to put that in perspective, let's to simplify it. If you're earning, it's like having $100,000 debt and you're only earning $10,000 a year. You're not going to be able to pay that off, right?
Yeah.
It has to be written off. This just physically can't be done. But you can reboot the system and then it's all numbers at the end of the day. I mean, in a way, another way to look at it is imagine if the dollar disappeared and the stock market went to zero. Okay, there was no more stock market and no more dollars. Now, you'd still have people. You still have factories, you still have farmland, you still have know-how, right? So it's all, and then you can just say, all right, we're just going to completely, you know, redo the way that we do things. We'll start from scratch, and we'll make it better this time. And that's the sort of thing you can go through. But the real world continues. I mean, the Soviet Union collapsed, but Russia is still there, right? It doesn't disappear. The land and the people and all the resources stay. It's just the accounting system that changes.
Right. It's not like the Empire State Building is going to crumple like a piece of paper when the Lehman Shock happens.
Yeah, it's still going to be there. Exactly.
You know, one thing that can implode this system from in is two guys who are my heroes. Mick Harrison and David Mineswinkle are tough lawyers. They filed a petition to the New York grand jury in 2018, and they've sent it to U.S. Attorney's Office James Burham and Deputy Assistant Attorney General November 7, 2018. And I have a little clip of them talking about this from, this is from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
I knew it. And he wrote on behalf of Jeffrey Berman, who is the United States Attorney. And he said in the letter, "We have received and reviewed the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 inquiry submissions of April 10th and July 30th, 2018. We will comply with the provisions of 18 U.S.C. 3332 as they relate to your submissions."
So I've listened to this whole interview. It's over an hour, and that's where we're at. They say, hey, it's been about a year and a half. They gave them the paperwork. They say they're going to follow through with this grand jury in New York Supreme Court, they haven't heard anything since. And it just...
Well, you know, okay, say you send like a dozen cops to the Pentagon, okay, and we say, we're going to arrest everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
and the Pentagon says, no, you're not. You know, I mean, look, the way I look at 911 is that that was an incredible crime, but, you know, going back, we've got to, they've been committing other bigger crimes since then. We have to get the bastards. I mean, that's one way. I'm in favor of all these lawsuits, and I hope that the perpetrators get caught, but, you know, it's going to pay a lot of people who are just following orders will have to be cut some slack on this. But another very weird thing, there's a group called the Gnostic Illuminati, and they contacted me. They claimed that they started the French, American, and Russian revolutions, and they're against bloodline rule. And the person I talked to was scouted by Bobby Fischer, the former world chess champion. Yes. And Fischer told him that 911 was actually an elaborate trap. Okay? Because they sold it to the controllers as a way to, you know, justify a big invasion of the Middle East on behalf of Israel, right? But they deliberately sabotaged it so that it became an obvious public crime, and thus, you know, set in motion what we're seeing now, where, you know, people like me, that, I mean, 911 was what woke me up, and a lot of other people, to the criminal nature of the U.S. power structure. So it was apparently a very clever trap, and the Zionists fell right for it, line, hook, and sinker.
But if they fell into a trap, who's going to indict them? I just gave you two lawyers in New York, Mick Harrison and David Meinswinkle, with architects and engineers. They're trying to set this trap. Who else has the authority if it goes up the chain of command?
Well,
and
I mean,
it goes to Dick Cheney's bunker.
120,000 sealed indictments, right?
Yes.
In the various U.S. courts, okay? I've heard that the group of controllers in the U.S. Numbers about 1 million people, and I've been repeatedly told they know they're going to have to flee the U.S. when their people, you know, wake up to the fact that they've been secretly under their control. And they've been looking. At one point, I was involved. They're trying to get permission to move to the northern Japanese island of Hokkaido. The Japanese refused, and they went. Tried to move to the southern island of New Zealand. Remember the Christchurch earthquake that came just after a group of 20 congressmen and people from the RAND Corporation went there and asked permission to move there, and the New Zealand people said no, and then there was a huge earthquake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just after the congressmen left. And now the latest talk is they're going to be sent to the Jewish Autonomous Zone in Siberia. But the point is that at the end of the day, we're dealing with an organization of about 1 million people who are part of this cult that practices human sacrifice. I call them the Satanists, although that's a vast oversimplification. But they're the sort of people who appeared in Eyes Wide Shut. So it's a real can of worms. So in other words, at the end of the day, you're going to have to take this group of 1 million people. Many of them pretend to be Jews, but they're not. But some of them pretend to be Christians, like the Bushes and whatever. These people are very, you know, they're all over the place, and it's a huge job. But, you know, these 120,000 indictments are a good start. I mean, that's but at the end of the day, that's what it's going to take to get the people behind 911. You're going to have to, you know, round up 1 million people and ship them out of the country or re-educate them or something. Some people want to put them in the FEMA camps. But, you know, the thing is that if you're born in that system, you either go along with it or you get killed. So they're also victims of a cult. You know, it's quite a complex can of worms. But basically, we're dealing with a human sacrificing satanic cult. You know, at the end of the day, we're talking about the secret group that is behind monotheism. Okay. And we're talking about an ancient system of control. It's really an incredible thing that's happening right now. It's going to be historic. I'd even go willing to say biblical with what we're going through.
Well, that's it if the indictments come through. You know, one person that you highlighted and tried to make infamous is a guy called Patrick Clawson from the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. He got a PhD in economics from my alma mater, New School University. He gave the whole evil bad guy plan that we're talking about. Let's have a listen.
I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America gets to war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II, as David mentioned. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people might think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall he had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to...
They had to wait for. Like, they want to go to war, but they have to wait for these crisis initiations.
That's right. I mean, these are satanic sacrifices.
It's bizarre that he says this publicly. This does happen, just like a James Bond evil villain. And
what's weird too is that they usually publicly announce it. That's part of their system. You know, like the Titanic, right? They had a book called The Titan, which, you know, appeared a year before the Titanic was sank, describing the exact plot and what happened. And basically, the Titanic was sunk to get rid of all these, super wealthy people who were opposed to the whole Federal Reserve Board scam that was going to be implemented, and they were all sunk conveniently. It was interesting, too, there was, when I was working for Forbes magazine, I started exposing more than I was supposed to about, the murder of central bankers and politicians and stuff here in Japan. They wrote a book, I think it was a guy called Barry Eisner, called Rainfall, in which the Forbes bureau chief was killed with a heart attack device, right? Mm. And they told me about this book, and they said, you know, that's you that's going to be killed in the book, right?
Oh, God.
And it sold, I think, 150,000 copies. And a couple years later, a guy with a fucking heart attack device attacked me, you know?
Was that the poison cigar? Or it was
It's like a white cylinder about a foot and a half long and about maybe 4 inches in diameter or something. You know, just as described in the book. So these guys, you know, they're pretty arrogant. I guess I'm a bit of a cockroach. I'm hard to get rid of, you know. But boy, they certainly tried, and they usually tried to advertise in advance too.
Now, and who was this person?
But they do that with all sorts of things, like the 911. They had a Fox TV special about a plane being flown into the World Trade Center a year before it happened, right? Yeah. So they actually advertise this stuff before they do it, you know.
Not only did they publish a book, but then they pointed it out to you. Who was this person that pointed this out to you?
Oh, man, I wish you'd remember. At the time, I didn't know what was going on. I just, you know, I had no... I thought it was sort of mildly amusing, and I think the book was called Rainfall and Barry Eisler. I could be wrong, but anyway, yeah, I should actually, you know, if I was curious, I should, you know, hunt these people down and find out who gave their orders. But I think I already know it's Michael Greenberg and the CSIS and those guys. I know who they are anyway, so, you know.
A lot of people have tried to off you, but somehow you have a higher authority is keeping you safe somehow, Mr. Fulford, I believe.
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, I don't like to believe I have divine protection. I look both ways before I cross the street, you know. I don't expect the God to stop a car for me, you know. But I think being brought up in Canadian wilderness where you have bears and wolves sometimes attack you, you get instincts that... You can sense danger. It's like a sixth sense, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why I'm still here. Plus, I created some insurance files that could put most of the top Yakuza bosses in jail if something happened to me, and I let them know about it. so they wouldn't subcontract to kill me for, and that's another reason why I'm still here.
Mm. You can make friends with the assassins in your neighborhood.
Well, I mean, and I convinced them I'm actually there, I'm working on their behalf to help Japan become independent again,
I want to totally change the subject. I wrote this question out for you. It really baffles me. There's a new Mormon temple, brand new Mormon temple that was built in Rome, Italy. It was finished January 28th of this year, 2019. It's 40,000 square foot. It took 11 years to build. It looks like a billion-dollar marble Las Vegas hotel. Now, I'm a comedian. I live in a small circle. The South Park creators created the Book of Mormon that's on Broadway, right? It completely mocks the Mormon religion. I don't know how they're expanding. I mean, Joseph Smith was a Freemason and a con man who died at the age of 38. And there's a new Mormon temple being built in the Vatican next to the P2 Masonic Lodge. They have something to do with it? What is going on here?
Look, I'm not an expert on the Mormons. However, they do a couple of good things that help them. One is that every Mormon at the age of 18 has to be sent abroad or somewhere 2 years to preach the faith, okay? Now, maybe they're preaching a bunch of gobbledygook, but sending kids to other countries to learn other languages and other cultures at a young age gives them a big head start in life. It opens their eyes to lots of things, expands their minds. So that's one good thing that they do. The other thing they do that it's not, most European peoples now aren't doing is they're having lots of kids. Okay, so that's another reason why they're expanding. Mm. The third good thing they do is they do an awful lot of genealogical research. They have some weird belief that if you can go back and find ancestors, you can posthumously convert them. Whatever the reason is, they've managed to put up a great genealogical database for everybody to use. So, I try to look at the good things that people do. I don't try to pick fights. Okay, maybe they have this weird beliefs that are completely nonsensical, but I don't, delve into that, and I try to look at the good things they do. Same with any other group I deal with. I try to find the positive and emphasize that and try to be friendly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess that's the influence of living in Asia for a long time.
But, if the religions are sort of tools of the cabal to focus a group's of mind and herd the sheep, it's almost like an intelligence operation, and that's why, in my opinion, they get tax-exempt status. Because, you're taking care of the minds of these people, we'll leave you alone, type of thing.
Okay, well, one thing I've learned dealing with real-world spy types is that, unlike the Hollywood version, okay, in the real world, intelligence agencies and organized religions are intimately connected, okay? So, for example, the FSB is very closely connected to the Russian Orthodox Church. The Catholic Church has its Jesuits and P2 Freemasons. The Protestants, the English have their Scottish Rite Freemasons, the French have their Grand Lodge of Orient Freemasons. They're all connected, okay? But so, yeah, religions and spies are they're part of the same thing, okay?
So when you go to confession, does that end up in a Vatican archive?
Well, I'm sure that, relevant intelligence is collected and used as necessary.
Here's a question. Is a DARPA, the Defense Authorization Research Project, are they a breakaway civilization? Have they gotten so much black funding from the cabal and the deep state that they are operating at a different level now?
Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. There's a lot of that stuff
DARPA.
I wonder about. I mean, certainly, there's a lot of evidence, but at the same time, right, us here on the surface of the planet, with the world that you and I are stuck in, we stopped sending people to space with the moon program. We're supposed to have people in Mars by the 1970s, and then in the stars by the year 2000, right? And instead, it's all stopped. So why did that? Why was it stopped? And you see a lot of things blowing up when they try to get past the ionosphere, right? So it almost seems like we're under some sort of quarantine. And so is there a group that escaped to the stars? You know, I don't know, but we're not, we can't go there. We can't get a ticket to the another star at the local, you know, Stargate or space station. And here in the real world, Defense Advanced Research Project Agency has produced things like the internet, and I think that Elon Musk and people like Google and stuff are, you know, putting out their technology for public use in an authorized form. So they definitely have some stuff. And then the thing, according to the American Association of Scientists, there are 6,000 patents that have been suppressed for national security reasons. And it would be nice if they could start, you know, releasing some of that stuff. I keep saying, I understand there's some things they'll never release. You know, we don't want some disturbed teenager going to the Walmart and buying a nuclear cannon, you know what I mean? But there's free energy stuff, other things I'm hearing about, anti-gravity, you know, stuff like that, that yes, we need to do something about it. Another thing that's here now, real world for sure, I've talked to people involved in the evacuation of Nazi scientists to Antarctica. I talked to a relative of Admiral Byrd of Antarctica Exploration fame, was also very senior in the CIA, and he told me that the Nazi scientists behind the UFOs and jet engines and all that kind of stuff, they moved. Antarctica is really cold, and it's not a very nice place to live. There was these huge underground caverns created by hot springs where they moved to. So they moved to the southern Australian coast, to Brazil, and to Area 51, among other places. So certainly, at the very least, in Area 51, we have a lot of highly advanced aeronautic stuff going on that... And I think they use a lot of UFO alien stuff as a kind of disinformation camouflage. But I believe that they have anti-gravity. I'm pretty sure of it. And I wish they would make that available to us peasants here on the surface, you know?
Absolutely.
But I'd love to see that opened up, that whole complex, the Groom Lake area. I'd like to see them, you know, open their doors to the public and show us all the wonderful stuff they've come up with.
I interviewed Andy Bishago on my podcast. He says they have time travel technology that he was a part of. Anyway, that's what he told me. That's all I know about that. Do you have any, my final question to you is, do you have any take on where they are with cloning? There's a guy I'm in touch with called Donald Marshall, and he's done a lot of interviews, not so much lately, but he says that he's been cloned. And that the music industry is all of cloned people. Do you know anything about this?
I have heard a lot of things. You know, I try to use Occam's razor and like to think they use body doubles. But certainly, I keep hearing that they have the ability, they create a clone and they can transfer the soul from the old body to the new clone, right? And there was one Japanese assassin who told me he killed his Jewish handler, right? And then, a few weeks later, the same man appeared, okay? And then, remember, during the election campaign, he had Hillary Clinton being stuffed into a black van and then appearing a few hours later, having lost 40 pounds, you know?
Yeah, she looked like the newer, younger model.
Yeah, at the what I was told at the time is that the clone was resisting being terminated and that she was transferred to this new body. I don't know about this stuff. You know, I keep hearing it. The other really weird one was George Bush Sr. when he was visiting Prime Minister Miyazawa in Japan. The dinner was broadcast live, and if you look at the video, it's really weird. He falls down, apparently he was killed, that's what my sources tell me. And then he falls down to the floor, and then he suddenly pops up, like, years younger. That was weird, whatever that was. So I leave a lot of question marks around that, but certainly there's a lot of technology that they don't tell us about that's years ahead of what we know about, and it's possible. But I still, there are too many question marks, so I'm still... Publicly, I lean to the, I use Occam's razor, and I think it's more likely they're using computer graphics and body doubles, but I do repeatedly hear about cloning.
It just seems to me the logical conclusion of Nazi breeding programs. I mean, the Nazis were all about, you know, genetic perfection, and if you read your Aldous Huxley of A Brave New World, it seems like the logical progression.
Maybe, but I'll tell you one thing. Okay, there were stories... about me being cloned at one point. And let me tell you what happened there, because this is a case where, you know, I mean, it's me, I know all about it. But I had this North Korean spy girlfriend, okay? And I didn't know at the time she was a North Korean spy, but she was doing things like going to the local ward office and saying that I was abusive and that I was taking drugs, which just wasn't true. And it was really, really strange for her to do that. So I said, let's go for a drive. We left our cell phones behind. We went to an area in the mountains where there's no cell phone coverage, right? And then we left our phones and our wallets and everything in the car, and we walked down to a river, a gurgling waterfall with lots of rushing water noise, right? And I said to her, now you can talk to me and nobody's listening, right? And she told me that they were threatening her family, and that's why she'd been doing that, right? Doing these things. But what happened afterwards is that when I came back, they freaked out. They said that I had been killed, and I'd been kidnapped, and I'd been cloned, all because I disappeared off their GPS monitoring system, you know, and they didn't know what, and I had a conversation. They weren't monitoring. And they put out all these stories, and I actually had to go out and deny the fact that I was a clone. But, you know, so in that case, it's clear disinformation. But, you know, these guys, they put out so much BS and so much disinformation, it's really hard sometimes to figure out. But, you know, I have definitely no personal memory of being cloned myself, although they put out stories that I was. But what did happen was I disappeared off their electronic monitoring system, which freaked them out.
It would be hard to know if you were cloned if they uploaded your brain perfectly on the chip, you know? I don't know.
Well, I would have a memory of waking up suddenly. So, yeah,
in a laboratory? In like a laboratory, you have a memory of waking up?
You'd think you'd have some sort of memory. I don't know. But I'm as sure as I can be that I have a continual record from when I was born to now without any weird gaps. Okay, I can say that much anyway.
You talked about the Gnostic Illuminati earlier, and I remember some interviews you did in 2009 with Alexander Romanov and Leo Zagami, and you barely left those meetings with your life. Have you heard from the... You've heard recently again from the Gnostic Illuminati?
Sometimes they get in touch. I mean, and these guys, they don't carry cell phones, and they don't trust anything digital. So anything I do is analog. Usually we meet, I leave my phone behind, we meet in a park or somewhere, But yeah, I mean, if necessary, I can get in touch. It involves getting on my bicycle and going to a certain place. You know, that's the level. It's the only thing that's safe now. I mean, the NSA doesn't trust anything digital, and they're in a position to know.
Well, that's all my questions. The only thing I want to know is, what do you see happening with the bankruptcy impending and the next election cycle? You think that there's going to be, instead of an election happen, sort of a reset as to the bankruptcy and the $200 trillion that the Federal Reserve owes?
I am hoping that the United States corporate government that was established in 1871, that took over from the U.S. Republic, will be shut down and replaced with something more benevolent. I'm pushing for it, but this is a war, and there's two sides in every war, and you can be sure that they're fighting tooth and nail to prevent that from happening. And I don't underestimate these guys. I haven't been fighting them for more than a decade. I don't. Who knows if they won't? But so I'm not going to say, but we're certainly pushing hard to shut it down, and hopefully, knock on wood, this time it'll actually happen. But no matter what, mathematically they're doomed. They've lost. It's just a matter of time now. That much I can say for sure. But like a bubble, you can say it's a bubble, but you can't say when it's going to burst.
Yeah. Every night the central banks have to balance their books. They have to have a certain amount of cash on hand to deal with the debt they have. And, you know, just like with the Lehman shock, I was watching a documentary before I interviewed you. It's like if everyone's bust, it's over. So we got to have something new.
Yeah, and hopefully, and the sooner you do it, the less the pain will be. It's like ripping off a Band-Aid quickly is better than slowly peeling it off. Well, okay, thanks for having me on, and good luck in your ventures. And I suggest you make yourself an insurance file, too.
Yeah, I'll start collecting data. That it's all on my podcast, though, unfortunately. It's all already out there.
Well, putting it out there actually is a good way of, you know, keeping yourself safe. But yeah, I think there's too many of us now for them to stop us at this point.
Thank you,
anyway,
Mr. Fulford.
Thanks for having me on.
What a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you, sir. That has been Benjamin Fulford fighting the Illuminati from his desk at Forbes until he was kicked out when he started publishing the real shit. This has been Highway Diary, episode 230 with Benjamin Fulford. Bye.